Coming at you live from a 3-inch high life of constant adversity and peril, it's Cartoon Night in Canada.
Hey, what you watching?
Got a problem with cartoon?
Of Cartoon Night in Canada, a nostalgic podcast where we dig through the animated past to find what cartoons made here in Canada are worth remembering. I'm your co-host, Chris Lucy Antonio.
And I'm your co-host, Sylvie Kettles.
And Sylvie, we are doing a show for babies today, and as always, I'm less than pleased about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep doing it to ya.
I know, this is always your call, because I would never put it up onto the docket, because I want to avoid this as much as possible.
Yeah. And, see, I hear the word nostalgic, and I go, well, when I was a dumb baby, you know, my nostalgia really is purely for when I didn't have to have a single brain cell in my head.
What a time to be alive. But I think I am dealing with some trauma from that era of my life, because I don't remember anything between the ages of, like, 2 and 13. So, anytime I've been forced to revisit one of these shows, I've always had to begrudgingly watch it again and remove my brain cells to accurately give it the best chance of working. But, as always, when we do these shows for very, very young children, I try and find the one thing that I can pull from it that maybe can make for some good conversation, and I pulled the name behind today's project, the incomparable William Joyce.
Yeah, that really does just come right the fuck out of nowhere, huh?
This is a heavy hitter if there ever was one. A illustrious career in television, film, and publishing. Like 50 books to his name, more television productions with award-winning series, and several high-profile Disney films and Academy Award-winning short films to his name.
And also Roly-Poly Oly.
Future episode of Cartoon Night in Canada, Roly-Poly Oly. Yeah. This guy has been, has a career that anybody would envy.
Oh yeah, like this is the kind of the guy whose like career is what any sort of aspirational or any aspiring like filmmaker is like. Yeah, this is gonna be my life, right?
If only, yeah. I mean, he started with a very unique art style, which is like 1950s inspired modernist New Yorker illustrative style and a bursting imagination, and he parlayed that into doing concept work for Toy Story and Bug's Life, and spearheading stuff like Meet the Robinsons, Robots, today's project, Roly-Poly Oly.
Tumblr, he wrote Rise of the Guardians.
Right, that's there's a Tumblr sexy man in that, isn't
no,
there?
No, Rise of the Tangled Dragons.
What, huh?
Oh,
you
I
lost
get to,
me. What are you doing?
I get to share another piece of Tumblr history with you? So there was a time because How to Train Your Dragon, Rise of the Guardians, and Tangled were all they came out around the same time. They were all extremely popular at the same time, and so there was like a whole
citation needed.
There was a whole Tumblr fandom dedicated to basically combining the three, and it was called Rise of the Tangled Dragons.
Great. Thank you. I wonder what that tidbit of information pushed out of my brain.
I hope something important.
Great. So we have this very talented gentleman to blame for that.
What? For at least
well.
A third of it.
Great. But no, this is an incredibly talented person. I do indeed love his art style. Take some time to look it up on your own. It's very, very pretty. Very imaginative, very the word that kept coming to me was classic. It has a very classic design look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but in his desires to conquer all media, which is, I'm sure, what he wants, he collaborated with a little-known studio called Nelvana, and, well, the fruits of that labor are on the chopping block today.
I think it's a literal chopping block from you.
I will be as kind as possible.
God, you are really, really not having a good time, huh?
I am trying. You know, whatever, let's just start.
Oh, well, the boy's kind of small.
George shrinks.
But it doesn't show at all.
George shrinks.
Because he's always acting tall.
George shrinks.
George shrinks, George shrinks, he's called. If a problem should be found,
George shrinks.
He's the boy to have around.
George shrinks.
Something big or something small.
George shrinks.
George shrinks, George shrinks, he's called. George often seems to find a way.
On this week's podcast, we unfortunately have to do our due diligence and climb up the ladder made from rope and baby garbage and enter the treehouse for George Shrinks. Too much?
No, it's fine.
Okay. Created by, of course, by the incomparable William Joyce, based on his 1985 book of the same name. The show was produced, as I said, by our dear, dear friends at Nelvana. It has been too long since we've covered a Nelvana show. It feels weird.
Yeah, it has been a while.
It's like I haven't seen, like, one of my favorite cousins for years on end. And then finally at the family reunion, they just show up. It's like, ah, this fucker!
Yeah.
As well as some work by Hong Kong for-hire studio Jade Animation, making this, what exactly?
Technically Canadian.
The best kind of Canadian.
I feel like this is more like it's a mostly Canadian.
Mostly Canadian. Three quarters Canadian.
Yeah.
However you want to slice it.
Yeah.
The show premiered as part of Nelvana's PBS Kids Bookworm Bunch.
Yay!
It really tells you all you need to know. On September 30th, 2000, if you're wondering, and I'm sure you are, the Bookworm Bunch was a block of programming Nelvana produced for PBS of shows based on kiddie books like Corduroy, Timothy Goes to School, previous episode, Seven Little Monsters, something called Marvin the Tap Dancing Horse, and Elliot Moose.
What?
Marvin the Tap Dancing Horse. You don't know the exploits of Marvin the Tap Dancing Horse from that famous children's book.
I mean, I guess future episode.
Yeah, every title I just named is unfortunately going to come up on the docket at some point. And boy, I'm happy about that. George Shrunks lasted 3 seasons and 40 episodes, and today, based on Sylvie's glowing recommendation of one episode that she could actually remember, we took a look at episode 33, Coach Shrunks, written by Jennifer Perch and directed by Brian Lee, original air date January 14th, 2003.
It wasn't even like the whole episode. No, I did remember the concept. But it was purely for the thing that George invents in this episode, and I desperately want it.
If there's anything to pull from an episode of George Shrinks, it's that, I suppose. Because you said that you remember the concept, and yeah, I do too. I watched Mighty Ducks.
I mean, even the uniforms of the hockey team that he has to fix.
It's called, the team is called the Storks.
Yeah, this is just baby's first Mighty Ducks.
I will say I do enjoy the mandated hockey episode of most cartoons made here in Canada. Regardless of what the shows are about, you better believe that the main character takes part in a Little League hockey team.
Yeah.
Happens so often.
Were you ever a hockey child?
No, I was not. My parents rightfully saw how much money that all that gear was, and rightfully pegged it out as being very dangerous for kids. Yeah. And it's not. You can absolutely sign your kid up for hockey. It's probably good for them. But they didn't want to raise a hockey kid.
God bless him.
No history on the ice for you?
No, I was a soccer girl.
Little League. Like, I'm sorry, baseball.
Okay.
Yeah, T-ball, baseball, that was my athletic history. But George Shrunks. What is this show about?
So George Shrinks is the story of the titular George Shrinks, a 10-year-old boy who, for some unknown reason, is 3 inches tall.
What?
In the books, in the book, singular, I think it's supposed to be that, like, he was born a normal child and then one day wakes up having shrunk. But for the sake of the show, he is born like that.
He is born this way.
Ra-ra-ra-ma-ma.
I have questions, many, many questions about this child's existence, and this is why this is not going to be a great evaluation of the show from this podcast, because I was just immediately hung up on the logistics of the show, which you should never be for a show for toddlers. Like,
yeah,
why are you giving it so much thought?
That is the entirety of the baby show episodes of this podcast are us just going, now hang on a second.
I guess it's the only thing I can really... It's the only way I can enjoy myself when I'm watching these shows for toddlers. It's like, wait. Slow down there, Mr. Shrunks. What do you mean you're 3 inches tall? Let's really break that down.
I have so many questions. Specifically, how? If this was like a Stuart Little movie, specifically Stuart Little, situation where, like, he was adopted and, like, it turns out this is a spinoff of the book series The Littles, and he was just an adopted little, like, that would be fine.
Is Stuart Little the fursona of George Shrinks?
Yes. He's gotta be.
Thank you.
Can I, ruin Stuart Little for you a little bit?
Oh, please. That film that I hold in such high esteem.
The adoption. No. The adoption plotline is movie original. Book Stuart Little was born of human parents.
From a human woman.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the mouse DNA come from?
Don't worry about it.
No, I'm worried about it. Where did the mouse DNA come from?
Don't worry about it.
Is this some fucking Monsanto chemical engineering thing? Like, what? Where is this family located in distance to, like, a chemical engineering plant? What are we talking here?
So that's what I'm saying. Book Stuart Little and show George Shrinks. Similar problems. Like, at least George Shrinks is a human child, but I do
at
have
least.
Similar questions.
But I said it before we started recording. This is just that, Louis C.K., redacted Louis C.K. bit about Clifford the Big Red Dog, where every single book is just, look how big this fucking dog is. Every single episode of George Shrinks is, look how small this fucking child is. And boy, is that not causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, they really have gone out of their way to not make George the constant target of bullying.
Does the world know about the 3-inch tall boy?
10-year-olds are vicious.
Yeah, where is George Mean Streak? Like, where is the day that he tries to bully his younger brother and the younger brother just steps on him?
No, I meant the other way. Like, there's no way this kid can go to a normal school, right?
No, that is a homeschool for life situation.
Yeah, because even with his special vehicles, some kid is going to, like, take his car away from him, smash it, and then step on him, and, like, what? That's gonna happen!
These are very important questions that the show for toddlers never endeavors to answer.
For some weird reason.
Severe problem, Mr. Joyce. Why didn't you answer all these questions about George Shrink's future? Like, what happens when he hits puberty? What do we do then? What happens when he enters the workforce?
I mean, he can probably have some sort of, like, tech job.
Work from home situation?
Yeah.
Just to, like, because he can't appear in an office.
Absolutely not.
So many, many questions that we should not be asking about George Shrink, but I nevertheless, like, this is the most interesting thing about this show, because if you just take it at face value, it's completely inoffensive and totally fine for toddlers. Like, this is, by all accounts, by all measuring sticks, a good show.
Yeah, it's, I remember liking it well enough as a child. I didn't grumble about it when I was babysitting for my cousin's kids. Because that was how
That's the highest praise you can give it.
Yeah, that was how I saw most of this show, was as a shitty teenager babysitting for my cousin's toddlers.
And, under like, duress.
Reruns of this show would be on. Hey, they paid well.
Okay, never mind. Yeah. There was no duress to be had.
Yeah. But yeah, I watched a fair bit of this show, and specifically this episode stuck in my brain.
The mandatory hockey episode, yes. Yeah. You gotta have one. If you're making cartoon in Canada, you gotta have one.
Those same cousins' children are now hockey kids.
Ah, it worked. The propaganda worked. So as you are, like, more versed in this show, I'm putting it to you right now, how much of these episodes are based around the fact that George is very small and he's just trying to make it work using stuff around the house to approximate a normal childhood life?
I mean, basically, that's kind of just the background radiation of this show.
Most
of the plots of episodes have nothing to do with his size and more to do with him just being, like, an egregiously helpful young man.
Yeah, okay, so it's just, we are, like, aggressively walking around the fact that this is a 3-inch tall child and just go with it.
Yeah,
like, everybody has to accommodate him because he's 3 inches tall and anybody in his immediate proximity is a danger, but he's super helpful.
But gosh, he's just the sweetest young man.
Big old G. Willikers vibes from this kid.
Yeah, he really activates my inner grandmother, and I want to give him a sweetie, and that's it.
You want to give him a ribbon candy and then pinch his cheek. But don't pinch too hard, because you will squash his fucking face.
Yeah, exactly.
You will crush his skull.
Yeah.
Because he's so fucking small.
I do. I want to, like,
I'm losing my mind.
Gently pat him on the head and say, bye, you've grown.
Yeah, just gently pat him on the head. Oh, that was too hard. You just slipped one of his discs in his back. Yep. Great job.
Yeah.
I do love, my headcanon for this show right now is that George has a younger brother, so the parents absolutely tried again to figure out, like, are we cursed?
Yeah. Junior exists solely for the fact that they were like, okay, we need to have another one, right? We need to see if we can do this again. And then they had, a normal... Perdita probably didn't even know she was pregnant.
How do you show
there's
pregnancy? Oh my god, what a fucking nightmare that was then.
Right? Like, he would have been, God, like, she would she even know have known to go to the hospital?
Would there be any labor pains, period?
Right? Or would she just queef out a baby?
This is what we're saying. This is what we're saying, is that the real George Shrinks, the version that we want, is the one that was conceived by David Cronenberg.
There is a certain amount of body horror that goes into the creation of a 3-inch tall child.
I mean, if you want to think at all about the biology, then yeah, you're gonna approach these questions, which George Shrinks and William Joyce did not bother to ask, and we're saying, you cowards, that's the most interesting thing.
See, like, book George Shrinks makes more sense like that, in that they decide, okay, we are... Like, he had to have been a normal baby, and then one day, mystically shrunk. Because it's then, at least, you can just go, like, okay, that's fine, that's fucking witch magic.
I think it's all a dream in the book. I think in the last page, he wakes up normal size, and you're like, wow, what a fun adventure that was.
Oh. Okay, that's also worse.
That's also worse, yeah. But, at least that's something. At least we don't have to wrestle with the existential concepts of George Shrinks in our society.
God, the, like, I'm really hung up on the birth. Like,
oh, that's a fun out of context quote.
Like, just the horrifying reality of, like, Perdita, like, suddenly hearing crying coming from her underwear. Like,
God damn.
I'm concerned.
Like, and that moment, knowing that, oh shit, our entire life are ruined now.
How do you breastfeed a baby that small?
Well, because he probably, like, at an infant size, he's probably the size of a cockroach.
Right?
Wait, and so wait, now, extrapolating that, like, 10 years old, he's 3 inches tall, like, proportionally, how big can George get?
Yeah, like, did he hit 3 inches at, like, the age of 5 and he hasn't grown since? His proportions have just been evening out?
Well, I'm assuming he's only 10, so he's going to keep growing, so...
Will he?
He must be... I don't know. But I'm assuming it's like, hey, proportionally, he would be a normal, like, average 5'10" human being, but measured down to George Shrink's levels.
What 10-year-old is 5'10"?
No, I mean, like, when he hits, like, adult age, okay. When he, like, he's okay. Finished growing.
Yeah.
He's hit his growth spurt, he's done, you have to deal with that height until you start shrinking in old age, which happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gravity really starts fucking you up.
Yeah, yeah. Many, many dumb, pointless questions about George Shrinks and his awful, upsetting existence, but... Hey, at least they got Harold Jr. there to be the real child.
Yeah, do you think that Jr. is going to grow up... Like, once he sort of gets out of this... Luckily, he's the sweetest toddler in existence somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because most toddlers that I've met probably would have accidentally squished him by now.
He comes close a couple of times. Like, he's a little rough with his older brother.
Yeah. I don't know. A toddler temper tantrum, like, I could absolutely see him grabbing his brother and flinging him against a wall.
Just like he's throwing his toys out of the pram, yeah.
Exactly. Do you think that Junior is going to grow up resentful of his tiny older brother?
Oh, God, yeah, because the tiny... older brother's gonna get all the attention.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically a glass child situation.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, okay, oh god. Apparently, in one episode, you see his, like, bronze baby shoes.
Okay.
And they're extremely tiny.
Oh, shit.
So Perdita Shrinks gave birth to a cockroach child. And they just ran with it.
Yeah, they really did just... They're like, well, I guess this is our son.
That's all well and good for your family, but you gotta stop pretending like it's normal. You gotta stop pretending like the rest of the world is going to accommodate your 3-inch tall son.
I mean,
like,
so far it has.
Bizarrely, yes.
Yeah, like... the plot...
Everybody's cool with it.
The plot of this episode is that a whole ass hockey team is like, hey, tiny boy, coach us.
Yeah, kind of a dropped line in that in this episode is that, oh, our coach found a better job and left us, and we've been by ourselves for 3 weeks. What do you mean? You've been going to games unsupervised this entire time.
Yeah, like, none of their parents even stepped up to be like, oh, okay, I'll at least babysit them. Like, they are unsupervised at the ice.
Have they had any road games in those 3 weeks? Like, who is driving them to the other town's arena? What are you talking about?
I guess maybe they can only do home games? Or it could be, this might just be a local league.
Oh, how big is this city? It doesn't matter. Okay, so Coach Shrinks, neighbor Becky is the star player of a absolutely shite hockey team that has absolutely no concept of teamwork. And so they turn to the 3-inch tall boy, who's apparently amazing at hockey, to help them win their first and only game.
Well, not even to win. They just want to score a goal.
A single goal is the
my God.
Prize.
Taika Waititi really saw this episode and was like, hey, hang on a sec. Hang on a sec.
Got his ass. Is this more or less the plot of Next Goal Wins?
Yeah. But, great. But just, you know, just add a trans woman in there.
Yeah, why not? I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just going to add that to my evidence of him being a hack.
Rips yeah, off George shrinks. Got him.
You stole your whole Academy Award follow-up film, like your blank check film, from a... not obscure, but a Canadian cartoon from the 2000s. You hack.
Sure.
And they want to give you Akira. What is wrong with this world?
What?
Oh, he was one of the names very early on to direct the live-action Akira film.
God, that's just so not his vibe.
It's so not his vibe, but he was the one that was attached to the project the longest. I think that project has stalled out and it's never happening.
Good.
Yeah, thank God for that. So yeah, Coach George, surprisingly decent coach.
Yeah, I think this might be, I would imagine something that comes from, coming from being so tiny that, like, he can't interact normally with children his age, so he gets really good at, like, understanding the theory of their normal activities. Like,
he can't
play hockey himself, unless it's on a table hockey table where he is the only human player, which
yeah, so
is
it's kind of
a very lonely existence.
Yes, he has like a he plays games with his family, but the thing about that is that's an unfair advantage because he is in the game of like tabletop hockey, he is a player piece that has free reign of the entire rink.
Yeah, he is not held back. Granted, his teammate is a toddler.
But who is doing great.
Oh, yeah. Junior fucking kicks ass at table hockey. But, yeah, like, granted, he has the unfair advantage of being able to take care of the entire space. But also, yeah, that's his only, the only way he's actually able to engage in normal activities. Is either on a tiny, tiny scale where he can't really be engaging with his peers.
Too dangerous.
Yeah, or he can engage theoretically. So, like, he gets really good at understanding how a team would hypothetically work.
Yeah, and I will say that this episode is technically really charming. Like,
yeah.
I very much enjoy the way how Coach George breaks down all of his team members into their best qualities and then instills in them a sense of cooperation and teamwork. This is very wholesome.
Yeah, like this is, I think, one of the really strong aspects of this show is that its episodes aren't, they don't break it up into the 2 11-minute thing.
Mm,
like this is
true,
a full half-hour episode, and so you really get to spend time with the storks. Basically, you get to have the time where for George to figure out what each player is really, really good at.
Yeah, and we get a nice bit of comedy of, like, how would a 3-inch-tall coach work with a team of, you know, average-sized 10-year-olds? And some wacky hijinks ensues with him riding on a puck and using remote control pucks and dramatizing their strategy using a tabletop hockey game. It's all very visually punny.
Yeah, it's cute. And they also, like, the Storks had a coach, an adult coach at some point, and it's really funny that one of the players is fully left-handed. And the adult did not notice that.
Apparently she found that stick in the basement of the arena. And is like, this will do.
I mean, granted, hockey equipment is extremely expensive. I don't blame her parents for not wanting to get her another one.
So, no, totally fair. But it's George who has this keen observation skill because, like you said, he can't interact with kids. So he's just gotta watch them and pine for a normal...
Yeah, like...
Normal existence as a kid.
He gets points as, like, you know, because he's a children's show protagonist, so obviously he's precocious as fuck. But, like, his excuse is that, like, well, you know, he can do nothing but watch his peers, really.
From a distance, longing for why was I cursed with this.
The story of George Shrinks is very sad, is what I'm saying.
George Shrinks is like, is like the negative attitude version of, he's just a little guy.
He's just a little guy, and isn't that horrifying?
Tragedy. Yeah, like, not like, he's just a little guy, complimentary. Like, no, he's just a little guy, tragedy. Like, hey, hey, listen, lay off George, why? He's just a little guy.
He's just a little guy.
Oh my god, I didn't know.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
What, did a witch do this? Just don't.
Don't ask. It's so painful.
Ooh, another headcanon there. It's like they were trying to get pregnant, per Dita and Harold were, and they went to a mysterious figure and said, like, please, we will do anything. We just want our family to grow. It's like, oh, would you be okay with a small family? It's like, yeah, that's a weird way to put it, but yes.
Yeah, we only really wanted, like, one or two kids.
Like, oh, your life will be full of small wonders. Like, what is this with Warlock? What are you doing?
Just make my wife pregnant. Make it happen. We were joking about when I first picked this show, it would be between, like, because George has a, what's called a supercar. It's a, like, a modified RC car that he can just fully drive.
That transforms into a plane. The other submarine aspect of his precociousness.
Yeah. Yes. He's an inventor.
Yeah, because he is a child protagonist, so of course he's got to have inventing skills as well.
Yeah. This is baby's first Jimmy Neutron.
Or baby's first Meet the Robinsons.
Oh, could be.
Funny that.
Could be.
A lot of the character designs are kind of carried over from all of Joyce's work. So specifically Harold Sr. in this.
Oh,
exact
yeah.
Same Meet the Robinsons hairstyle. But you were saying.
About
a supercar.
Oh, yeah. So he's got a supercar. That is also a plane, that is also a submarine, don't worry about it. Stuart Little has a Corvette, and there's the Beverly Cleary book, The Mouse and the Motorcycle. I want these three characters to road race.
Oh, that's a crossover kart racing video game I'd play.
Exactly. Can someone mod Mario Kart real quick?
Yeah, just real quick, mod Mario Kart, put in George Shrinks in his supercar, put in the mouse and his titular motorcycle, put in the third one that you said,
Stuart
forgetting
Little
about.
And
Stuart
his...
Little, the George Shrinks persona, that's an alt costume for George.
No, they have to be separate characters because you have to be able to, two players have to be able to pick them.
Okay, fine. But if you select Stuart Little, I want in brackets for this mod, George Shrinks persona.
Okay.
I want to start that narrative. I want that to catch on.
Yeah, make it happen.
Please. I need this.
Yeah, I mean, you can start the fan fiction. Because,
no,
spoilers.
I refuse.
I did try to do a fan fiction corner. There's none.
There's none?
No one is writing weird fics about George Shrinks.
Now, is that because it is a show for babies?
No, because as we've seen in the past, that
is that
not,
hallowed ground?
That has not stopped anyone in the past.
Show for babies, have we encountered that you've done a fanfiction corner for?
Several. Let me find the screenshots.
Oh no, there's screenshots.
Timothy Goes to School.
Okay, never mind, stop. I'm good. Okay, you proved your point. ew. Okay,
I think there was
that's
for,
fine.
For Franklin, like
that's more than enough.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's weird. It's truly weird.
But nobody, George Shrinks is not inspired people, huh?
Yeah, which is a shame because it clearly inspired the designers.
Ooh, yes. Well, let's talk a bit about that. This look, this art style, this deliberately 1950s nostalgic throwback.
Why do it look like that?
This is all borrowed from Joyce's signature art style that he's employed throughout his career. You've seen it on the cover of New Yorker, as well as several of his children's storybooks. It's a it's a deliberate, like, pop, not necessarily pop art, but, like, modern pop art, modernist pop art, 1950s classic look to it. Mm-hmm. And I like the way that it melds with Nelvana's, like, house style of really bright primary colors and rounded figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it worked well.
Yeah, they really, the characters really blend well with these environments. I feel like the soulless little dot eyes work really well for this.
That's a signature of Joyce as well.
Yeah.
Like, that's featured in most of his storybooks. It's a little off-putting at first.
Yeah, but it kind of works.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I grew liking it. What I don't like is the big rosy cheeks on everybody.
Not on the adult men.
Not on the adult men, thankfully, but it's a choice. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it's I think it feels like a design choice meant to make everything just seem more cheery.
Mm-hmm.
And innocent. This is like the whole show is like aggressively sweet.
Yes, yes, it is. It's enough to give you a cavity or diabetes. It is so sweet. I do appreciate this, specifically this timelessness feel. Like, it has all the iconographic hallmarks of the 1950s, from, like, the fashion choices to the decor of their home.
Mm-hmm.
It feels deliberately, like, 1950s.
But with, like, a more contemporary ideology, I guess. Like, you've got the hockey teams are all co-ed.
Mm-hmm.
Both mom and dad take an active role in raising their children.
Both have jobs. Both it's a two income household.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
But they're both in the arts.
Both in the arts too. Yeah.
Honestly, that explains their vibe so much too. That
why they're so upsetting. They're so accepting of a 3-inch tall child. It's like, wow, what a miracle, man.
Yeah, oh god, they were absolutely hippies.
This, I equated this a lot to that deliberate out-of-time feeling of Archer.
Yeah?
Where it feels like that's taking place in the wrong decade from what it actually is, which is, like, you know, contemporary. It seems like all the technology, all the fashion, all of the all of the look is just deliberately thrown back to a different decade. And I get the same vibe from George Shrinks. It feels somewhat out of time.
Mm-hmm. And it works. It kind of works for just...
No, I think it actually creates a pretty powerful vibe.
Yeah. Because it means that it's the kind of show that it's never going to feel outdated.
No. The only thing that caused it to feel outdated was the 480p version that's uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah, like this is absolutely the kind of show that if they felt the need to, Treehouse could just constantly air reruns always and forever.
More or less, yeah. I think it's I think Joyce's art style is well suited to the, as I said, the Nelvana house style, and it creates a pretty visually appealing cartoon.
Yeah,
and when you couple that with the soundtrack, which is all soft jazz, it's like
bangers.
This show is a comfort.
The weird pull for this was the Jumpin' Blues style opening theme, composed mm-hmm. by Roberto Occipinti,
yes.
And sung by Canadian blues rock singer Colin James.
Yeah, he's kind of a, you know, also he's kind of a massive deal in Canada.
He still gets radio play.
It's true. You know what, like 15, 20 albums to his name. Several have gone platinum.
Yeah.
Here in Canada, at least. Yeah. So.
And like he's still actively, or he's still active. Like, I think his last single was in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, he's he's still an active musician. And that just, you know, this one time in 2000, he was like, yeah, I'll sing the George Shrinks theme song.
Do you think he performs that live?
He should.
Look, if up until the double murder-suicide of Chris Benoit, Our Lady Peace was performing Chris Benoit's theme song in concert. Weird comparison. But Colin James then, by that logic, should perform the theme song to George Shrinks in concert up until some tragedy.
Yeah. No, that only seems fair.
It's only fair.
Yeah.
I think I said it before, but on this podcast itself, but I really like it when bands who have done... Who have, like, lowered themselves, quote-unquote lowered themselves, to do a theme song for a TV show, probably getting the biggest paycheck of their entire career.
Oh, yeah.
I like when they do that in concert. Like, I don't give a shit about Bare Naked Ladies, but they perform
the
Big
Monsters.
Bang Theory. No, yes, they should do that.
they should perform the Seven Little Monsters.
Yeah, they should add that to their set list, yeah. But they perform the Big Bang Theory theme song, because yeah, that's the one song that most people know from them nowadays.
Yeah, it's that and If I Had $1 Million, Always and Forever.
If I'm going to see, say, Simple Plan, I want them to play What's New Scooby-Doo.
I forgot they did that.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they did. If I'm seeing Good Charlotte, I want to hear the Undergrad theme song.
Oh, absolutely.
And if I'm... Well, I'm not seeing Motorhead now, but because Lemmy's dead. But if I'm seeing Motorhead, I want them to perform Triple H's theme song. It's just how that is.
Yeah.
It's a contract you enter into with your audience.
It kind of makes it seem more like it was a thing that they had fun doing rather than a thing that they did for a paycheck.
Absolutely. And besides, like, I really, like, the Good Charlotte song, The Click, is my favorite Good Charlotte song. I want to hear that if I'm going to pay money to see you guys.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, they don't even have that one streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
Criminal. Criminal behavior.
It is a crime against me, specifically. Anyway, how does Coach George Shrinks solve all the Storks' problems?
Well, most of it is just through classic teamwork-building exercises and, like, teaching everyone to play to their strengths and also learn to support one another. And the other thing, the most important thing from this entire episode,
the thing you remembered,
is that he realizes pretty early on that the goalie has really good reflexes in table hockey, and he doesn't fully understand why that's not translating onto the ice.
Why is she letting in 10 goals a game?
Yeah, and then he realizes that she's taking off her glasses before she goes onto the ice. And he's like, well, that's weird. You need to be able to see, idiot. And she's like, yeah, but... And he's like, don't, no buts. Put your glasses on. And it turns out that the whole reason she's been leaving them off when she plays is because they fog up on the ice. And she can't see shit, no matter what. And... So, realizing that her glasses are fogging up, George immediately goes home, finds one of his little boat toys that has functioning windshield wipers, and in the time span of, like, one 15-minute break, manages to set up functioning windshield wipers on her glasses. And as a child first seeing that, I wanted those so badly. And I still want those so badly.
I think you're the first person to ever watch an episode of George Shrinks and say, God, I wish that were me.
God, I wish that were me. I just want, when I come in from the cold, to not have to immediately locate a tissue, take off my glasses and wipe away the fog.
No. And you raise a good point there. But this is also... This also gets folded into this, like, deliberate post-war 1950s Americana, where it's like, oh, what will the future be like with with our inventors of this time? Of course, they'll invent a type of glasses that have windshield wipers for you.
Oh, 100%. That's, like, the vibe.
The amazing future of the Robinsons.
Yeah, this has big, like, Y2K vibes, weirdly.
I mean, it came out in 2000, so yeah.
Yeah, when people were still really, this is like, oh god, what's that name of the design style for like early Windows?
I don't know. I do know that like now it's all kind of folded into this umbrella term called the Y2K aesthetic.
Yeah, which is funny because it's really not.
It's not, but that's still a great Twitter account you should follow.
Schrödinger Arrow.
Oh, okay.
That is the name of, like, specifically the Windows XP era of design, where it was, like, this weird amalgamation of technology and nature. Like...
Oh, okay, yeah.
When everything was, like, kind of glassy and shiny, but also... So it was, like, the idea of this tech utopia.
Sort of bubble to it.
Where it was, like, technology and nature... living together harmoniously, and that's kind of like the vibe of a lot of these shows where you've got an inventor protagonist, because it's always like, yeah, they're coming up with these super cool futuristic things, but also they like camping and protecting the environment.
It's mixing the engineering spirit of the 1950s with the environmentalism of the 2000s.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I'm seeing where you're coming from. And I am going to correct myself that Twitter account is Y2K Aesthetic Institute.
Ah, okay.
Go check that shit out if you want to see some great, strange art from 24 years ago now. So yes, under the tutelage of Coach Shrinks, the Storks manage to score a single goal and everything is right in the world.
I think that's my favorite thing about the episode is that they don't win.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I think that is such an important lesson to teach children, is how to lose, and to either, and to find joy in that.
As well as to manage your expectations and enjoy progression, getting better at something, because you're not going to, after one session with Coach Shrinks, become the best hockey team there ever was.
Yeah, and like this is the last game of their season, so they're not going to, you know, somehow come from the bottom and win the playoffs. Like, literally their goal was to just get a goal, and this is something they've definitely learned now.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids are going to take the lessons that they learned from Coach Shrinks and apply that to the future, and that's, I'm really happy for these fictional cartoon children.
Like I said, this show is aggressively wholesome. Yeah. Like, I find, like, this is probably the best measuring stick of quality you can give to a show for toddlers. Is like, if I had a kid, I would absolutely sit them down in front of this.
Yeah.
I would have no qualms about that for their scheduled TV time, their screen time, or however parents are putting it nowadays.
Yeah, like, if you have an iPad child, there are worse things that you could put on that iPad than George Shrinks.
I think everybody has an iPad child now.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything to be taken from the cast?
Yeah. We got a few mainstays. We've got Tracy Moore as George, an old guard member of Canadian voice actors. Adult women forced to play young boys forever.
Easily recognized voice, like, immediately stuck out to me. It's like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Tracy Moore.
Yeah.
Still doing her best job. Like, it's the voice that she uses over and over again. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I like her narration in this. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. And that's... I think she does a good job of I think it's... could possibly be that just I've seen so many cartoon boys voiced by adult women that my brain is broken, but like, she sounds like a young boy.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same voice she used for Ned's Noob.
Yeah.
Yeah, exact same tenor, exact same register. It's just her young boy voice. And is okay, so George Shrink's name, is it a... No, it's not. Okay, so like, George Bernard Shrinks is his full name. Is like, is that a George Bernard Shaw reference?
I mean, it could be.
Could it be?
It's not impossible. There is a non-zero chance.
Okay. Moving on.
As Harold Trinks Jr., we've got Robbie J. Fouette, who I just pulled up just because Junior has like all of 6 lines per episode.
Always the same things too.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, she nails it. Same thing. Woman playing a toddler boy, just like all you gotta do is be curious.
What a weird career this woman's had.
Yeah.
4 credits to her name, including George Springs, and then a TV movie called A Slight Case of Murder, a TV movie about Elvis meeting Nixon, which, is that the one with starring? No, it's not. It's okay. A different made-for-TV movie about Elvis meeting Nixon. And then La Femme Nikita. Like, what?
Yeah. And that's it. She hasn't done anything since 2003.
Holy shit, look at the cast of this made-for-TV movie called Murder for... Slight Case of Murder. William H. Macy, Adam Arkin, sorry, Felicity Huffman, James Cromwell, Julia Campbell, wow. Jesus. Vincent Pastore.
weird poll.
Yeah, this sounds like a 5 out of 10.
For this episode, as Becky, we've got another old guard, Bryn McCauley.
This is another one of those names that immediately jumped out to me.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, voices that jumped out to
yeah,
me.
It's because like, oh, it's, yeah. This is literally just her Anne Shirley voice for Man of Green Gables.
God, that's it. Yep.
Yeah, because, I mean, this was being made at the same time, too.
Oh, so she walks into the studio, sorry, into the casting booth and said, like, listen, you're getting one voice out of me. I can't lose it.
I think she was a child at the time, too, so that...
You're getting one fucking voice out of me. I'm not fucking losing it.
And then as the Shrink's parents, I did specifically want to pull them both, because Paul O'Sullivan as the dad, this is the first time I've heard an like almost aggressive Torontonian accent in one of these shows.
Yeah.
Like... He does the full, like, about, like, he, or what does he say? Because it's not about, it's, like, boat or house or something. There's, like, another
something
word
like that.
That, like, you can always hear the Toronto.
Yeah, it's, I had the same reaction to him as I did to the dad from Ned's Nude.
Oh, that's right!
It's like, oh, man, that's... That is the most Canadian voice I've ever heard in one of these cartoons.
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
you got a Canadian voice in there. Because I feel like a lot of Canadian voice actors, like, with an identifiable regional dialect, like, you flatten out that accent because you're mostly working for American television.
Yeah. And you don't want to be typecast.
God forbid you sound Canadian as a Canadian.
And I genuinely thought his performance was one of the best on the cast.
Oh, yeah. I think, because this is also,
I like this
like,
goofy dad.
Yeah, I love that he's a goofy dad. He makes weird instruments. And that's, like, we didn't really get into it, but at the final hockey game, he's designed this, like, bagpipe with pencils?
You know, typical dad things.
Just dad things.
I do wonder how they're paying the mortgage.
Yeah, because dad's a musician and mom is, she's an artist. Like, honestly, it's probably mostly she sells, because it seems like she does a lot of like weird, goofy modern art things. So she definitely has an eccentric, wealthy buyer.
There you go. She has a patron.
Yeah. As it should be.
And who voices this mother?
This is Kathleen Lasky. I don't think she's come up before. She's definitely been in shows that we've talked about, but...
And she will appear later on.
Yeah. Oh,
no.
She's the mom in Carl Squared.
Yeah. As well as Crystal from My Dad the Rockstar.
Ah! Lot of moms. Lot of moms in this woman's... Under this woman's belt.
A lot of moms under this woman's belt.
Yep.
Another out of context thing to pull from this episode.
I also, she's notable specifically because every time, because I know I've seen her name before, but every time I see it written, I immediately think of Catherine Lasky.
Okay.
The American children's writer who wrote Guardians of Ga'Hoole.
Of course!
Yeah.
Who wouldn't get the two confused?
I don't know. It's so, so comically similar.
And let's just put it out here that Kathleen Lasky has fallen to the trend that we see often with these actresses, where she is cashing Hallmark money.
Good for her.
She has several Christmas movies to her name that have absolutely never been played in a theater before.
I mean, they pay well, is the thing.
Yes, they do. She is living off that because she keeps appearing in them.
Yeah, like, I will literally never hold it against an actor if they're in just a shitload of Hallmark schlock. Because, like, no, get that bag.
Yeah, you go ahead and appear in Christmas in Washington.
Yeah. Show up in The Enchanted Christmas Cake and take that cake all the way to the bank.
Exactly. You show up in 90-degree weather wearing your winter outfit and you just make it work. Sorry. 22-degree weather because they're filmed in Canada.
Yes. Yeah, usually over the summer.
Yeah. Awful for them. You know what? You live a hard life. You deserve that money.
Yeah, I mean, having to act like you're a little bit chilly when it's, you know, 25 degrees out.
Yeah, you only get like one. You only get one take, because after that one take, all the sweat stains start to show, and it's like, well, now it's ruined. get new parkas on all these extras, because, like, they've sweat right through them.
Well, I mean, that's why I assume no one is properly dressed in Hallmark movies. None of them are wearing, like, hats and mitts. Sometimes the man will wear, like, gloves, but, like, none of them have proper winter coats. Presumably because they are filming in the middle of summer. And that's just creating more work for your, like, editing department at the end, because then they have to try desperately to cut around all of the lush summer greenery.
Yep. Yep, and all the people walking by set in t-shirts and holding iced coffees, it's like, fuck, this one's ruined.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, George Shrinks is fun.
Yeah, yeah, final thoughts on it. I think it is, like, as I said, perfectly inoffensive. Like, outside of the many, many questions that it has prompted in me about how exactly this child gets on in our society, regardless of the existential aspect, totally fine.
It's wholesome if you ignore the body horror.
It's wholesome if you ignore the body horror.
Final word.
And we said it that maybe, we said it before that this is ripe for a reboot, and David Cronenberg, I know you're listening.
I know you listen to this show.
And if not, Brandon Cronenberg, I know you're listening. Have either of you ever wanted to get into television? Well, have I got the project for you? Did you watch that, Boots Riley show, I'm a Virgo?
No.
Well, it's about a child who's exceptionally big. So, George Shrinks is just, like,
Hang
the
on.
Inverse of that.
Yeah.
So, there's interest in it. That show did very well and got several awards. Oh, and so got several nominations for awards at the Emmys. So, the iron is hot. Time to strike. George Shrinks. The body horror version.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I will say, my actual final point. I had a semi-realization just now. The 50s vibe, this feels like a deliberate response to, like, the 50s B-movie idea of, like, Attack of the 50-foot-tall Woman.
Or The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Yeah, it's like, what if the opposite, like, what if Small Child?
What if Small Child?
What if Small Child?
Yeah, I think that works. I think that is what they were going for.
Yeah.
Let's say. We cracked it.
We did it. We solved the puzzle. We can go home now. I can see my family.
If only, If only we can... we have to stay until we can figure out what George Shrink's puberty is going to look like.
Fuck.
I need that report on my desk by Monday.
I don't work on the weekends.
Well, Monday's coming up, so you better squeeze it into your morning routine. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada. Almost said George Shrinks. If you like what you heard, and how could you not, please consider giving us a like, share, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that helps us reach the widest possible audience. You can find the show on Twitter at Cartoon Night Pod, where we post episodes every Saturday.
Except when we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Cinema Creep, where I will be petitioning David Cronenberg to get off his fucking duff and make George Shrinks.
And you can find me at Sylvie Skeletons, where I guess I'll be working on the thesis paper for what George Shrinks' puberty is going to look like.
I want it annotated, I want it illustrated, and I want it yesterday.
God, I can't have that in my search history.
Well, that's a you problem. Goodbye.
Bye.